And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are on a Friday. Back in studio at One Bills Drive. It is One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Welcome in. Hot and sticky today. It's been humid the last couple of days here in Western New York. And obviously this evening, 5:30, it'll still be relatively warm for the players as they make their way out onto the Highmark Stadium field this evening for the return of the Blue and Red here at One Bills Drive. All tickets sold out. It wasn't, you know, it was a free ticket for entry, but you need a ticket to get in. And all of those tickets were distributed. So it is going to be a packed house tonight here at the stadium. We are looking forward to it. We'll be taking it in all its splendor. And just from some of the comments we've seen out there on social media, people are pretty amped to get over here.
Wow.
Late this afternoon. Parking lots open in a couple of hours, as do the gates. And, yeah, have at it.
Yeah, this weather's not supposed to be great. If it rains, they kind of expect maybe like half no shows because the tickets are free and people say, well, I'll take it.
Yeah.
If I can go, I'd go. You know, so like half the people do that. And then if it rains, it'll be 11. But it's going to be the biggest turnout for this event in its history since they've been doing it. Of course, it's been gone for a couple of years because of because of COVID. But man, oh, man. We've been advised.
People are jazzed.
Yeah. We've been advised to clear out of the parking. Oh, the work, you know, the staff and stuff, get your car out of here at like 3 o'clock because you're going to be parked in if you're not. So there's no seat assignments either.
It's general admission.
It's like a rock concert.
Yeah. Or those college basketball games where,
oh my gosh,
you know, those students, they have to wait at the gate and then they open the gates and you got to race to try to be the first to the best seats in the house. Do you ever do that at Northwestern for a basketball game? Do they have that?
For a basketball game?
Yeah.
For a concert, I did.
Okay.
I've done it for a concert.
All right.
I got into the Eagles, Linda Ronstadt, and Dan Fogelberg that way.
Wow.
It's a big summer rock 78.
Look at that.
1978, I'm talking about. I was.
And where was that?
It was in Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah.
Where the Chiefs play.
Well, at least you know you get
was
a seat.
Right there, man.
Oh, you ran. You were on the field.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Was my I was cool because I had my three older brothers were like, yeah, okay, you can come with us.
Yeah, so you were the tag along guy.
Pretty cool.
Nice.
That was my first ever rock concert. So I've done that, and it's, you know, you got to have some survival skills. I mean, it's not like you can do that when you're six, right? I mean, you can't just go and find your
seat. Don't be slow or you will be left behind.
Well.
Or trampled.
Yeah. You lose your balance. It's like
you better find high ground fast.
You got to grab somebody to keep yourself up and sacrifice them.
Get to the high ground.
That's right. It was that way. Listen, think about it.
Throw me a line, bro.
Think about it. It's November in 2015. Is that right? 15?
Yep.
The game goes to Detroit. The Bills-Jet game moves from Sunday at 1 to Monday night at whatever, 8.
Yeah, 7.
In Detroit. Your tickets are good, but no seat assignments. It's a rock concert. See ya. If you have to go to the bathroom, you're not going to have your seat when you come back. It's true.
Seat safe.
Right?
Seat safe. Hey, buddy, save
my
seat.
Watch my sandwich.
Watch my sandwich.
You know? And that was.
Should I leave my
beer? I was a sideline reporter for that one. That was pretty. Because people, you know, since there's no seat assignments or whatever, people are like leaning over the front row. You know what I mean? It's a little packed, you know. 15 people in the seats of 10, you know, that kind of thing. They were like just.
It was wild.
It was. And I.
It was a great game for the Bills.
The Bills crushed the Jets that night. I knew they would. Whenever your team has to go through that during the week.
Yeah.
I did it in high school. Same thing, snow game. We pushed the game back. We didn't have school for 2 days before the game. They had the game anyway. We played. We crushed them. I knew that the Bills would win that game for that reason, because of my high school team.
That's right.
And then,
well, that sounds like veritable evidence that, you know, you can truly depend on.
It's pretty scientific.
Yeah.
Case section.
It was
case study.
A weird week that week.
Oh, my gosh. Can you remember
we're
that?
We're on the team plane, and we leave on a Thursday, and guys had to get, Scott Chandler got here on a snowmobile
right.
that his neighbor drove him here with.
Right.
Because it was a lot of the roads here in the South towns were still impassable.
Was six literally there was
some guys walked here to get the bus to the airport. Some guys got snowmobile rides. It was nuts. Fortunately, I only live like 5 or 10 minutes from the airport, so and the roads were clear up there.
Up there, the roads were okay.
Well, yeah. I had 5 feet of snow at my house, and I live about a mile south
of, the 90.
Of Genesee Street.
Oh, okay.
A mile south. North side of Genesee Street, 4 inches of snow.
Yeah. I was out of town for 8 days. I had a game on a Sunday, had a Monday night game, a sideline reporter. Flew back into town on Tuesday, and I was like, oh, man, because it hit Monday night, right? Yep. I was like, oh.
How did you even get in?
Not only did I get in, the flight was on time, sunny, landed at the airport, sun was shining. You look south, and it looked like a 5-mile-wide, 20-mile-long white caterpillar was laying on the ground.
Yeah.
That's how thick that cloud was. It was, like, right on the ground. So I had to stay downtown. I came home. I've been gone for the weekend. Had to stay downtown. Went to the Sabres game that night. Me and three other people. The guy scanned the ticket office at Sabres.
There's going to be plenty of room in there.
He said,
about picking a seat.
He went, boop, boop. He goes, you can sit everywhere you want. Anywhere you want. He did.
Look at that, full circle, right back to
General
admission.
I scout the tickets off the front walk, sidewalk. Guy gave them to us. Boop. We would go in. The guy was, sit wherever you want. Then the next day was Wednesday.
Hold on, pause.
Go ahead.
That's a dedicated scalper there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Probably had a lot of inventory to
right.
move, though.
Had some tickets to move. it didn't cost me an arm and a leg. But so the next day is Wednesday, and it did rain. It snowed overnight downtown Wednesday, but it was like 6 inches. So, for us, it's like, it's tough, but we're all right. And I'm just like, I can't get home. We still can't travel south of the whatever street it was. So I said, okay. I called CBS because I got to do a game in Atlanta the next week. And I go, hey, they go, okay, you got a flight at 4:00. You're going to Atlanta today. I was like, okay.
Turned around and went right back out.
I went back to the airport. They took me down to Atlanta.
Did you have to get your clothes dry cleaned and stuff?
I went
through the hotel, laundromat.
Bought underwear and socks.
Yeah.
And got to Atlanta. I said, listen, I'm going to be there for 5 days. And they upgraded me to the, finger quotes, presidential suite.
Ooh.
Dude, it's like a 3,000-square-foot hotel room, like three-room bed. I was like running around and, wow, look at that, jumping on the beds.
Like
so I sit down, turn the TV on, and, I live in EA, East Aurora. Who's the guy on the Weather Channel that does the...
Oh, Jim Cantore.
Jim Cantore is on Main Street in my town. He could get in, and I couldn't get there. He's standing in Main Street of my town.
He has special privileges.
So I do the game in Atlanta. CBS calls me and says, hey, the Bills game is in Detroit.
Monday.
Would you stay on the road, go out to Detroit on Monday?
You've been on the road for
a
week.
Right? So it's like it'll be my fourth game of like. So I go, yeah.
Fourth game in 15 days.
I said, yeah. 15. It was 8 days.
Oh, 8 days.
And so I go, yeah. So I go to Detroit, hook up with this crew here, our crew, the Bills. Like, hey guys, what's up? So I'm doing the game, and so we win the game. I fly home with the team.
Yeah, I remember you.
And listen to this. This is the truth. And if it was wet, but Kelso dropped me off at my house, I could have mowed the lawn. After 90.5 inches fell. It was gone by the time I got home. I thought that was it was a hoax. It was brownie. It was gone.
The white shroud.
You remember that? How it was like flash floods and it got like up to 58 degrees and the snow. It was gone. The guy, our snowplow guy, showed up with a front end loader. He couldn't lift it.
Yeah.
He couldn't push it.
Yeah.
So he lifted it.
Because it was wet and heavy. That's
he
why.
Lifted it and 18 hours later, everything was gone.
That was the worst snow removal I have ever had to undergo
my
property,
right?
In my 25 plus years of living here.
Me too. That was
nothing is even close to that.
Yeah.
My arms were sore for 3 days because I was literally shoving my 5-horsepower snowblower into the pile, and then I would have to pull it out so it wouldn't stall, and then I'd shove it in again, And I did that for about 2 hours straight. Yeah, I had to refill the gas tank.
Everybody's got those stories. I mean, it really was an event, a lifetime event. I mean, it's once in a lifetime event. I think, you know, the blizzard of 78, of course, is a legendary.
77, yeah.
77 is legendary. This, you know, Snowvember is now legendary.
It is.
And how do we get on this? How do we get in these weeds?
We started talking about general admission. And then you said the Detroit game, the Bills game that moved to Detroit was general admission.
We actually started today.
And then you threw in an additional general admission.
With
the Sabres game.
And the Eagles.
Yeah.
And Linda Ronstadt and Dan Fogelberg, my first rock concert.
Yeah. So cool.
It's going to be cool today. It's the Bills, I don't know. Some of the guys are like, listen, they're done. They don't want to watch. They're going to go home. They don't want to fight the traffic and stuff. They don't even want to watch practice.
Yeah, but there are.
That we've been watching every day. So
I mean, there are literally kids jumping for joy to come to this thing. These guys are like rock stars now in this town. It's just
this year. Yeah, no question.
It's different, and you can see it.
The expectations are the same, but the atmosphere is much different than the teams I was on in the Super Bowl. Even after Super Bowl 25, when we came back and people said, all right, this is our year. We're going to do it this year, right? And the reason is social media.
Mm-hmm.
You can't if you don't want to, you don't have to escape it. You don't have to turn the TV on to get news about it or whatever. Everybody's got it right on their hand. So the awareness and the inescapability of the Buffalo Bills in upcoming season is palpable. And so can you imagine what it would be like to be a kid like this? You just so stoked for this.
Yeah.
I mean, so
pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool atmosphere.
NFL news and notes, Steve, concerning week one for the Bills. Rams head coach Sean McVay, we touched on this yesterday. He said Matthew Stafford's elbow is a, quote, tricky deal and, quote, abnormal for a quarterback. There have been reports that are calling it tendinitis in his throwing elbow, and they say what he's suffering from is more akin to what Major League Baseball pitchers deal with concerning elbows. So this is of pretty serious concern here. As we know, they have put Matthew Stafford on the shelf for team segments of practice. I think we can almost guarantee we're not going to see hide nor hair of him in the preseason because we didn't even play in the preseason last year. Now with elbow trouble, there's no way that dude is going to see the preseason game field.
Yeah, that's what do they say? You know, so the timeline is looking like week one,
I think it's a race to
week one.
McVay is walking. He's walking.
It's gamesmanship.
He's saying the right things, but this is just my gut. I tend to believe they're gripping a little bit.
You think?
It's his throwing
elbow.
You
think some genuine concern there?
There is genuine. They were talking about minimizing the pain he's experiencing in his elbow.
And he's not even throwing?
Well, he's doing individual position drills right now. You know, throwing on air. Routes on air. He is not participating in any team segments of practice. So this is an issue.
Yeah,
and how long it – look, we talked about it yesterday, Steve. 34 years old, pain in your throwing elbow. That doesn't just get better this time of year when reps are the thing. So they're reducing his reps, and they're – I mean, this is not only a load management thing, like they're putting him on a pitch count.
It's not just because he's old. He's hurt.
It hurts. Now, what's manageable? How does it impact his delivery? How does it impact his accuracy?
Yeah.
If he's even going to be able to play.
And his availability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got him, and then you have their third wideout, their number three wideout, Van Jefferson.
Right.
He's on the shelf. They're hoping he can play week one, but that's very much up in the air. So very quickly, the complexion of Buffalo, and I know we're a long way off. We're a month away from the game. Monday will be exactly a month from the game. It'll be August 8th, the game September 8th. But those two guys could dramatically change the complexion that game looks like.
He had to get an injection for his elbow last season, during the off season.
Yeah.
And he didn't throw during the Rams spring stuff at all. So he hasn't even been throwing.
Right. But they said he's looked great in throwing drills this week. He was doing.
Yeah, he's throwing 7-on-7.
Yeah, but not 11-on-11. And they're going to keep him out of it for the foreseeable future because they don't want to overtax the thing.
You know, that you can't load manage your starting quarterback's arm.
Throwing arm, yeah. Yeah,
you can't load manage it. He's got to throw.
Yeah, if he wants to be good.
Yeah, and yeah.
If timing you want, if with you receivers, click. You know, looking sharp.
I mean, I don't.
This is an issue. This is a problem. And I don't know if there is. Here's the bottom line, as far as I see it. Your starting quarterback for the Rams has pain in his throwing elbow. It's been described as tendonitis. What's the cure for tendonitis? Rest.
Yeah.
Rest. He can't rest now. He can't do it.
Yeah.
And also play quarterback for the Rams. You can't do both.
See, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing. He's going to have to sit and watch for a couple of weeks. And I mean, you think about this is back in 2018 when Josh got his elbow whacked in the pocket. Remember that?
Right.
In
week
Houston
five
game.
At Houston. Yeah. Rookie
and he
year.
Missed, what, four games? Three games? Two games? What was it?
It was at least two.
I think it was two before he could come back. Now, he got injured. But this injury, this ailment that Stafford seems to be dealing with is not an incident that happened to him. It's a chronic issue that he's dealing with, and he's been dealing with it since last offseason. He got through the season with it, and you got to think, if worse comes to worse, depending on what the diagnosis is, that it may be one of those things where if he takes a shot.
You're right. Josh missed four games.
Yeah. If he missed a shot or gets a shot and just says, listen, this is it. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to take the shot. As long as it goes, I'm going to go for it.
I'll keep throwing with it until the wheels come off.
Exactly. That means for sure he's going to be in week one.
Yeah, but how's he going to look?
Right.
And how's he going to throw?
How's he going to get ready for week one?
How's he going to get ready? And then even if he is ready, and I mean, you shoot up the arm, you don't want to shoot it up too much. Like, you
got
to feel.
Well, they got that. Yeah, that's. But yeah, that. Here's the thing. When they shoot you up, take it from me. When they shoot you up, they don't, like, make it not hurt. They just give it to you to the point where you
bearable.
Can stand it.
Yeah, it's bearable.
So you're like, you're sitting there, you're saying, if you're going to shoot me up, come on, bro, give me the big needle. You know? Give me a little more of the good stuff. Yeah. And he's going, nope, because you got to be able to feel it.
Well, yeah.
So if the thing does crack, or if, you know, whatever, you can still feel it. You know it's hurt.
Yeah.
So they don't really numb it up like in the old, you know, North Dallas 40 novel that you read about in the 70s. They don't do that anymore. They just get you to where you can live with it, which really stinks. So Stafford may be in that boat coming out of the offseason. And, man, oh, man, here's the thing. Brownie, how much did he throw, period, to make it start hurting again? You know what I'm saying? They were there for, like, what, 2 days?
Yeah, they started after the Bills did.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even there a week.
And now it's already like, I don't know. And he didn't throw in the offseason. I mean, come on.
This is bad. I'm just saying
that's
it.
That's bad.
I'm just going to say it now. I'm not a doctor. This is going to be a lingering problem.
And well, it already is, and he had a last offseason.
Well, right, but it's resurfaced, and this kind of stuff just doesn't disappear.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It hangs around. It's going to be a nagging thing. And look, Stafford's as tough as they come. Don't get me wrong.
He is as tough as they come. Well, to his own detriment.
Well, sometimes to his own detriment, correct. But this is a tough one to manage and still be an effective quarterback. Velocity, accuracy, all these things could be impacted by elbow tendonitis. So it's going to bear close watching as we get closer and closer to the season opener. And for those that are wondering, the backup quarterback is John Wolford. Is that Will Wolford's nephew?
Yeah,
it's Will Wolford's nephew would slot in as the starter.
And he was there last year.
He was. 54% completion rate.
He was there last year.
Threw 42 passes last year.
Good for him. Bless his heart, he got a Super Bowl ring. You know, that kind of thing. So Wolford's not a newbie to the offense.
No.
It's concerning. You're the defending Super Bowl champions, and your quarterback is not himself.
That's a problem.
And hasn't been. It's been, you know.
it's a problem, and it's going to linger.
I don't know. I mean, we're getting.
I don't know how they're going to manage this successfully. Steve, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't be surprised. Guy plays a week, and maybe has to take a week off. Plays a couple of weeks, may have to sit out a week.
I would think they've
That's
got
tough.
I would think the sports science people would have a plan to get him on the field to stay, and given whatever ability he has to heal.
Yeah. It's definitely something to keep an eye on leading up to the opener, though. I mean,
we got
to
keep an eye on, yeah, particularly the Bills. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
It's the first game of the season, and
I mean, a lot can happen in a month.
Right, it's a month away, so a month you can do a lot in a month.
But the radar is up on that. I mean,
that's really
you're
concerning.
Running out of time.
And it's not just for the Bills. Of course, it's week one. I want to see how he's doing.
Yeah,
but for the Rams, they're
oh boy,
their whole season. They ain't going anywhere. John Wolford's not the guy to take them to another Super Bowl and defend their title.
From the files that Bills fans are sure to enjoy, our good friend ESPN's Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots, is reporting the number of no-chance plays have been notable so far in Patriots camp. In case you're wondering what a no-chance play is, it's when basically the offense has no chance of making anything happen on a given play. And the numbers of said plays have been numerous. It's not that there haven't been successful plays, according to Reese, but the lack of consistency and frequency of no chance plays has also been notable at Patriots practice in training camp. Even though Coach Belichick has praised Mac Jones' dramatic improvement, he has also put former defensive coordinator Matt Patricia in charge of calling plays. So everybody is wondering, is this a Mac Jones problem? Is this a lack of true playmaker problem? Or is this a Matt Patricia calling the play problem? Let's just say they're a week into camp and the fingers are already getting pointed. Hoo-wee! Isn't that delicious? God, I love that stuff.
That's a little snack for the morning.
There isn't enough bad news from New England that I can read and be satisfied. Just keep giving it to me. I'll get out a ladle. Give me a ladle, and I'll just keep
like
scooping
say,
it up and just drinking it all in.
Rub it on my face.
Mike Reese, I love you. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. I've known Mike for a long time. He's a good friend of mine. Keep it
that is,
coming.
That is so great.
There is not enough of that.
Here's the thing, too. We saw the Patriots in the 40-mile-an-hour win game that was an atrocity for the Bills. It was just a downer of a night, and the Patriots just didn't have to do anything to win the game. You know, the Bills had no answers offensively to get on the board and put any pressure on them. Then the Bills go to New England and lump them up. They didn't punt. The Bills didn't punt in that game, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that happens. In their building, then they come here in the next time they play in the playoffs when really matters, and the Bills absolutely crush them.
It's a clinic.
It is an absolute.
It was football perfection.
You
no punts,
no negative plays,
no turnovers, all touchdowns every drive. I mean, it was.
They could not possibly have gotten another offensive yard because every time they got the ball, they went the distance and scored.
Yes.
It
was the perfect game.
It was the perfect game offensively, and the Patriots had. Now, I don't know how you argue that their defense got better this offseason. J.C. Jackson gone. Their best corner is gone. I don't know. Maybe they drafted an offensive lineman, number one. They brought back Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, that was their
after he was
at corner.
After he was on the couch last year. Well, he was watching
games
Tennessee,
with us. He was in Tennessee, wasn't he?
No, I heard he was on the couch. He wasn't playing. Okay. I got to check that out. But anyway,
I'll check.
You'd be hard pressed to have anybody say they got better defensively. And here we go again. And now they're over there. They can't that defense that the Bills just absolutely dismantled. Is now making the Patriots' offense.
Yeah, you're right. He didn't play last year.
Crushed.
I mean, he was in Tennessee the 3 years prior to that, but did not play last year. Wow. that's the guy you're counting on to be your one number one corner.
It looks, I mean,
woo.
I mean, I'm sure they got a plan, but hopefully, I mean, they got a better plan than trying to surreptitiously film your opponent's practice, steal their game plans, and pirate their defensive signals.
And doctor the football.
And doctor the footballs. Because I think those days have been found out, unless they've got a new level of, deception.
Man,
we'll
see.
Their
starting corners are horribly average.
It's bad over there.
Steve, I'm just going to say this. People don't want to bury the Patriots because they don't believe they can be bad until they actually see it.
Right. And even when
I'm
they are
bad. I'm telling you right
now,
I think they could be bad.
I might be.
Or at least horribly average.
Horribly average. Bills fans know what that is.
Am I trying to manifest something here? You're damn right I am.
Oh, my God.
Other NFL news and notes.
If we just say it enough, maybe it'll happen.
I'll speak it into existence. You don't have to ask me twice. Bucks camp. Not good news for Mike Evans, who apparently tweaked his hamstring today. Could miss some time going forward. Todd Bowles confirmed Mike Evans left practice early because of a hamstring issue. He called it a tweak, so the severity of it is unknown. We'll have to see how much time Mike Evans misses. And then his fellow receiver, Chris Godwin, of the torn ACL, Steve, returned to practice today.
Yeah. That's training camp for you.
Well, but here's the thing that makes it interesting to me. Chris Godwin suffered the ACL injury in week 15 last year, the week after the Bills played them. Tre'Davious White suffered his ACL injury in week 12 on Thanksgiving. So, as we say all the time, every case is different concerning ACL injuries. But does this give us reason to get excited that if Chris Godwin, who tore his ACL 3 weeks after Tre'Davious did, is back practicing with the Bucs, albeit on a limited basis, does that mean that we could be getting close? I mean, you don't want to project one rehab onto another, but without any information on his possible return, no timetable whatsoever on Tre'Davious White, can we use Chris Godwin's return, even though he got injured 3 weeks after Trey, as a sign that perhaps we're getting close?
Well, I think they are getting close for Tre'Davious. I don't think there's any question that from the very beginning they would have put it on the calendar, said, listen, we got to get ready for – and they said training. We said, well, day one, just week one, absolute is drop dead. So, and however long they want him before that, what would you say, Brownie? A week? So he can practice and get 100%
yeah,
acclimated?
I would not anticipate him playing in the preseason at all.
Yeah, he's not going to play in the preseason. But that's you're thinking you need to have him practice against Steph Diggs. You need to have him practice against all these guys to get his feet under him and get some game shape. And then, even then, probably limit his snaps in the game, maybe.
Now, they did say in the report on Godwin, who returned to practice today, the general consensus is he is not going to dress for week one. So they're easing him into the practice setting now, but even though they are, and we're a month away from the regular season, they're saying Godwin's probably not playing week one, which I found interesting also.
Really?
So back to practice, but, and this is media speculation, it is not an official team saying, oh, he's not playing week one. The general consensus among the Tampa media is they'd be surprised if he suits up week one against Dallas.
Yeah, that – and here's the thing, too, I was about to say this as you got into this with Mike Evans. Doesn't it just sound so familiar where you get, Mike Evans is out with a hamstring. We got Chris Godwin back. Awesome. Wow, now Mike Evans is out. That is total training camp conversation right there. Just as something happens positive, you get this, you get something over here that gets busted.
I wonder how much more difficult it is for the athletic trainers, the doctors, the sports science people that are overseeing training camp in areas of the country where it is just stupid hot, just blistering heat,
right.
High humidity. Like, you really have to monitor the players in a way that I think is dramatically different from training camp, at St. John Fisher in Rochester, where I think the highest temperature we've had is 85, And humidity, the first day of high humidity was yesterday for the entire camp that the Bills have been at St. John Fisher. So if there is a blessing, it's that you don't have to practice in conditions where you're genuinely concerned about dehydration, heat stroke, heat exhaustion, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
Down in Tampa, this time of year, are you kidding me? You sweat upon sight of the sun.
Yeah. It was humid in Rochester yesterday, St. John Fisher, but it wasn't.
But not like that.
Well, it wasn't 97.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
With a heat index 112.
Right. It rained a little bit, which kept the humidity high. But, it's been perfect over at St. John Fisher. It's been great. Yesterday was the first iffy day weather-wise, and it rained after practice.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it removes the concern for the athletic trainers and, you know, the medical staff.
You got guys falling out.
But down in Tampa, man, or, you know, Houston's training camp, like, they've got like 90 days in a row of 100 degrees down there.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. A different animal.
It's crazy.
It's a different animal.
If you listen to the sports science people, I would think they would be telling you that you got to cut back.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't
cut
practice
it short,
as long.
Reduce
you know?
Your reps.
Right.
Or practice at night.
All that crazy stuff, yeah.
Let's put the lights on and wait till the sun goes down.
Think about it. In Phoenix, it's 1 a.m. and it's still 97.
Oh, I've been there in July.
Right? It's crazy. It doesn't cool off at all in Phoenix, ever.
Yeah, back when I was doing arena football games, that season's in the spring and the summer.
If
we're
you go
in
to,
Phoenix.
Right.
We're going to the bar at 11, and we pass a bank. You know, they put the temperature up.
What is it?
It was 98.
Yeah.
At 11 p.m.
Pitch black.
I was sweating walking
so
down
bad.
The street.
So you get out there and you practice 2 hours a day. Think about this. We talked about that. I might have said this yesterday. I can't remember.
San Angelo, Texas.
No.
Oh.
We were out there at that. It was a very difficult practice yesterday. We both commented.
Yes.
It was a very physical, very long, a lot of periods.
Demanding.
Back to back. Third and short. Goal line. Team periods going. And the guys were hitting. And it was, you know, very grueling practice. And I thought, you know, back in the day when we were on the air, they would have been getting ready to come out and do it again.
Yeah.
That's how nuts it used to be.
It's crazy to think about it now
because the game is so good, and it's not because they practice two-a-days for two straight weeks in July, late July. It's good because the players are healthy enough to play well.
Right.
And the stars are always showing up because they're not beat up. They were so dumb back in my day.
All right, we got to take a break here because we are over break time. But when we come back, in case you didn't know, the OBL Friday fan mailbag is open. Send in your questions at One Bills Live on the tweet sheet, or you can give us a call, 716-803-0550, or 1-888-550-2550, toll-free, open line for you. Fire off a question that you might have about the Bills, the league at large, what the heck's going on with this Deshaun Watson case. We'll try to help you out here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And time for us to get your questions as the OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open. Any question under the sun you have on the Bills, the league at large, what have you, fire them off. Who to watch tonight, maybe, if you want. We can steer you in the right direction.
Who to watch
803-0550.
Is there a game on tonight?
1-888-550-2550. The practice tonight.
Oh,
if you're coming to the practice.
Oh, this practice. I got you.
Yeah,
we're talking about the Bills again.
Yes, we are.
All right.
Of course we are.
I thought we were at the NFL at large. Yeah, that took me a minute to come out of the commercial there.
you okay?
Right? I thought you were talking about something because I was reading I'm reading this article here about – did you watch the game last night?
I did not catch a snap of it.
I was reading some stuff about the game last night, and then I made the transfer.
That's right.
So
Raiders won.
Raiders won. Jaguars looked horrible. The first pick, though, Trayvon Walker, flashed a little bit for the Jags. And then it was like a bunch of guys I didn't know.
Yeah. Josh Jacobs played more than a lot of people anticipated, running back for the Raiders. And basically Josh McDaniel's answer for that was, running backs, it's good for running backs to get work in the preseason. Okay.
They're not going to, whatever.
I mean, what's he going to say?
And what are they going to say now? What's it's going to, is it going to be a story next week when he doesn't play a single snap?
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Raiders won 27-11. That was the final score in that game. Jags were playing with their third-string quarterback, right? Jake Luton?
Yes. Yes.
So that'll set you back a little bit.
A little bit. And the stadium wasn't full. I guess the Jags and the Raiders don't pull in a national audience.
The Jags and, yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, the place is full when the Bills, Browns, and Steelers are in that game.
Yeah, I mean, the fan base for those two teams is pretty far away from Canton.
Right, exactly.
That's the problem.
Nobody's going to get a weekend in Canton.
Right.
From Jacksonville.
But let's go to the OBL Friday fan mailbag for some of your questions here in advance of tonight's blue and red practice for the Bills at Highmark Stadium. Jack asks, got to ask about the return game. I've heard next to nothing, and with Stevenson now dinged up, who is taking punts and kick returns? Are there any surprises? How has Austin looked? I think what you have to keep in mind here, Jack, is in the practice setting, there aren't a lot of live reps. There are some.
There's no tackling.
But there's no tackling. The coverage, guys are getting down there, but they're basically making sure they're in their lanes. They're steering the returner the right way.
Yeah.
The guys that are blocking, it's thud blocking. It's not – the intensity of that play on a game day is purposely not duplicated in practice.
Yeah, it's been a problem forever for special teams play that you can't go full speed in practice.
Yeah.
And I think it's a nod to the destructive nature of the play because there's so much. Now, kickoffs and stuff, even those, with today's new rules – they don't do them live. Now, they'll block live and pick guys up live like that, you know, but they won't tackle to the ground. The returner just goes through and it's thud. Nobody tackles, but they can cover hard, and they do the same thing in punt team. Nobody's tackling the returner. So it's always been an issue with special teams that you can't go full speed in practice.
So it's largely a landmark drill when you're running it, right? I mean, it turns into that?
Yeah, it's a technique
to some degree.
Drill. It's an absolute technique drill, but you're trying to do it at full speed. I say you're running at full speed, you're punting the football as far as you can and all that, you're catching it,
yeah.
And even the returner will take off running, but nobody's allowed to hit him and tackle him. And so there's nothing that...
It's at half speed, essentially.
Once the play, after he catches it and starts to run, there's no secondary reaction you get so much in a special teams
play.
So,
Jack,
it's hard to prepare
I guess
for that.
That's a long way of saying... To evaluate the returners in practice, short of ball security, kind of hard to do.
I'll say
we're
going
to have to wait till the preseason games before we really get an assessment.
It's not lost, though. It's a good question. Who's the return man?
No, it is a good question. Because
if Stevenson is not doing it.
And McKenzie has a larger role on offense.
Right. That's the thing. If McKenzie has a large – that's the guy. If Isaiah McKenzie has a larger role offensively – he's not going to be available to return punts. Not that the offense is on the field during punt team, and he wouldn't be available, but you can't stretch him that thin and ask him to do that and play really well at wide receiver, particularly every snap at slot. It's just too – it's mentally he won't be able to devote enough to both of those things to be good at either one. And so that brings you to the point where, well, if Stevenson is out and McKenzie needs to be the return man, does that elevate Khalil Shakir and or Jamison Crowder to the number one slot guy? Do you think the return guy is important enough to sacrifice your best slot guy, if it is indeed Isaiah McKenzie, you know, and put him in returns rather than on the slot? There's no way. The slot guy's way more important because he's got 65, 70 snaps a game, not 6 as a punt returner and 3 as a kickoff guy. So
And there are other candidates in the mix. I just don't know if we're allowed to divulge that. That's the only thing.
No, everybody who handles a ball or has a ball, and you know, like all the DBs are candidates, all the wide receivers are candidates, and the running backs are candidates. So every athlete, I don't know what I'm seeing, like the big guys aren't athletes. I'm just saying, you know, that's the way it is. So, and you, if you go to practice and watch, they got like nine guys catching kicks.
Yeah.
So there's no, and I'll say this too. Even if Isaiah McKenzie was penciled in or not even penciled in ink that he was going to be the return guy for the regular season, he may get two kicks all of preseason. And then, you know, come out and do it in the regular season. So we're gonna get a chance to see all these people in preseason games get a chance to catch punts.
You know, and a guy like Tavon Austin, who has return experience, this is a way to help him get on the roster if he can get some opportunities in the preseason, make the most of them. And then you run into an issue where you're saying, well, am I taking Jay Kumerow, who's a good blocking receiver
and a coverage
and plays
guy.
A role on special teams? Or am I taking Tavon Austin because I need
the return
a
guy.
Primary return guy that doesn't have a giant role on offense? Those are the kinds of positional decisions you come down to when you're trying to get to 53, and it's not easy.
Kumerow's a core guy on coverage, kickoff and punt, and he's also on punt return, all that stuff too. Yeah. So, you know, he's a four down special teams player, punt return, kickoff return. That's big. You need guys like that. And to trade him, because he plays the wide receiver position, you got to trade him out because you don't want to keep eight wide receivers on the roster on game day, because now you can only keep two running backs.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tywan Jones is out or something like that, you know. So, it's an issue. But and it's a good question from Jack, because who that's going to be, it needs to be a guy dedicated to it, in my opinion.
Yeah. We have to take a break here. More of your questions from the OBL Friday fan mailbag coming up, along with an undrafted receiver who is getting first team reps in Dallas. We'll tell you who it is next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Everybody, Kids Day returns to Highmark Stadium as the Bills host the Broncos for their preseason matchup on August 20th, presented by Fisher Price. The Fisher Price Jr. tailgate kicks off at 9 a.m. in Lot 6, bigger than ever, featuring a Power Wheels track, giant inflatables, and I mean giant, a real fire truck, games, and more. Also, a limited quantity of Bills wristbands will be given out as a gate giveaway, and special concessions available this year, including popcorn, ice cream, cotton candy, snow cones, root beer floats, and a kid's lunch deal featuring a hot dog, chips, and a Capri Sun. Mobile ticketing, as usual. Visit BuffaloBills.com/KidsDay for more information. That's a game that kicks off at 1 p.m. on August 20th. Could be a scorcher here in Buffalo.
Yeah, I noticed you're really relishing the list of refreshments that they're going to be shoving down these kids.
Well, who the hell doesn't like popcorn, ice cream, cotton candy, snow cones, or root beer floats? I mean, that's a clean sweep right there. That's like a royal flush.
Here's what you got to do. Here's the challenge. You got to do all of them.
Ooh. You and I should do that.
We should do it.
We might not be suitable for work afterwards, but
we should do that. We got to go to see the popcorn. I'm a huge popcorn fan. Ice cream, I mean, who
if I did that, I would most definitely be in a food coma. That's a lot
cotton
of
candy.
That's a lot of work.
Cotton candy.
Cotton candy's easy. It just turns into pure sugar and then
right.
melts in your mouth, and you're good. It's the volume of the other things, like a root beer float. That's a heavy dessert.
A snow cone too.
That turns to water. Brain freeze, but it turns to water. I'm talking about fitting it all in.
Well, you don't have to like finish the whole, you know.
Why not? I mean, isn't that the whole point?
I mean, not the whole
point. We're going to be taking that kind of Kids Day challenge.
Kids you know? Day challenge.
Eat one of everything.
I wish really, we could sample all of it. We'd have to, you know, have
I thought
everything.
We had to, like, finish a serving size
No.
Just, of all of those.
We should go out and check it out.
Steve, there is an undrafted rookie who is making the most of his opportunity in Dallas Cowboys training camp. Undrafted rookie wide receiver Dennis Houston has been working with the first team offense. 6'1", 198-pound receiver, 4.49 40 speed. And when undrafted out of Western Illinois, all Missouri Valley first team last season, 90 catches, 1,015 yards, 6 touchdowns in 11 games in the FCS. Led the FCS in catches per game. He's getting a crack with the ones because Michael Gallup and James Washington are both out for an extended period of time with knee and foot injuries, respectively. It's the next man up for the Cowboys, Steve. And he, along with fellow rookie Jalen Tolbert, who was a draft choice, have been working with C.D. Lamb in the first-team offense.
I get it, but that's why this is a story. It's not a story about, what's the kid's name?
Kenny Houston.
Not Kenny Houston.
Oh, it's Dennis Houston. Why do I want to call him Kenny?
Kenny Houston.
Was there a Kenny Houston?
Yes, he was
there
a was. Cornerback. He was a cornerback for the
Okay, I got a mental block there. Dennis Houston.
This is not a Dennis Houston story.
This is a Michael Gallup, James Washington story back.
That's what it is.
Oh, so, we all love an underdog. I mean, come on.
Yes. And
Dennis Houston.
This let you know how warped reality is in Dallas. So.
Yeah.
I get it.
Make it happen, man.
And I know. The story goes Dennis Houston. And somebody's selling it for kids back in New Missouri State, you know, that they're got
Western Illinois.
Western Illinois, okay. Western Illinois.
Yeah.
Where's Western Illinois? What town? All right, I'll look it up.
I couldn't tell you. Western Illinois.
That's what
I don't know Western Illinois terribly well. You should know it better than me with the region of the country you come from. I know that Northern Illinois is in DeKalb. I know
that.
I've been there.
Western Illinois is in Malcolm.
Macomb.
That's correct.
Macomb, Illinois.
That's correct.
Well, we'll see if they know how to make them based on how Dennis Houston does in training camp. So good luck to him.
Yeah, Western Illinois, Macomb.
So you got Western Illinois and Macomb. Northern Illinois and DeKalb. There is a Southern Illinois too, the Salukis, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the Southern. Yes. Illinois got a ton of universities.
Where are they? In Springfield?
Southern Illinois is in, that sounds right.
Springfield would make sense. That's the capital, number one. And it is, it's not Southern.
It's in Edwardsville.
Edwardsville?
And there's also one in Carbondale, Illinois.
Talk about putting.
Carbondale's the one I know.
Talk about putting your directional schools in public remote outposts.
Edwardsville.
Edwardsville. Okay. There's Eastern Illinois, too, because isn't that where Tony Romo went?
Southern Illinois is the Salukis. Is there an East? Let me just see if there's
I'm pretty sure.
Well, let's see.
I think Tony Romo went to Eastern Illinois.
And that's in Charleston, Illinois.
Okay. Well, now that we've solved the directional school dilemma for the state of Illinois, the land of Lincoln.
And I'll say this. You got to. Another kid going to college this year. I had 5 go through college.
Man.
And all these young people, you were talking about Northern Illinois, Southern Illinois, Eastern Illinois, and Western Illinois. And you get your kids, they agonize over their choice of a university. Absolutely agonize over it.
Yeah.
I tell my kids, after a while, I started learning this. I didn't start with the first one because I was the same way. I was like, oh, my gosh, were you right? There is no wrong answer. There's not a wrong answer. It's not like you're going to go to this university and your life's going to explode and this one is going to be prosperous and happy. You know, there is no wrong answer. The right answer is after you get there and you make it the right answer. You make it the right answer.
Yeah.
So I always told my – and as a parent, I did not care where they went.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them went to an Ivy League school, could have gone to UB, could have gone to play football.
Yeah.
I didn't care where he went. I really didn't. All you care about is that 24 hours after they're there, they give you a phone call and they go, "Wow, this is awesome." And you think, "Okay, I'm good. That's fine. I don't care if you're at ECC or if you're at Harvard. If it's your spot, it's your spot. I don't care. Yeah. I really don't."
We have to take a break because second hour of the show, we are going to lead off with a guy who can weigh in on the Deshaun Watson legalese and the Miami Dolphins legalese, maybe better than anybody else, Andrew Brandt, business of sports analyst. He's going to be joining us next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Hour number two, and time for us to welcome in business of sports analyst for SI.com, host of the Business of Sports podcast, and the director of the Morad Center for Sports Law at Villanova. It is our good friend Andrew Brandt joining us on the line. Andrew, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. It's been busy. I'll get right into it. You know, I was immediately surprised at the six-game suspension for Watson. I, like everyone, I don't think there's anybody that wasn't surprised in terms of people around the country. What made it more surprising for me is really the opinion of Judge Robinson, jointly appointed by the union and the league. She agreed with the NFL. She thought he violated the personal conduct policy. She thought he committed sexual assault. She thought he was predatory. She thought his conduct was egregious. She put in a no massage clause that he cannot get a massage outside the team for the rest of his career. And with all of this, then it comes down to six-game suspension. I was just surprised. It turned on the phrase nonviolent, and she scolded the NFL for imposing this egregious penalty as something that she termed nonviolent. I assume distinguishing it from cases like Ezekiel Elliott, Kareem Hunt, Josh Brown, Ray Rice, et cetera. So that's where we are. And, of course, now we enter the appeal phase. But this is an opinion, I mean, I'll teach about in law school, that it reads like she's going to hand down a two-year suspension. And then it goes to six games.
Yeah. The question is, has anything really changed in the process except one extra step sending an outside arbitrator, one who's paid by the union and the league, only to have it fall back to the league right where it was before they negotiated a new CBA? Is Roger right. Goodell just going to say, hey, listen, Peter C. Harvey, former Attorney General of New Jersey, would you please just give this guy a year indefinite suspension, a $10 million fine, and we can move on with this? I mean, is it going to be that simple?
I don't think so. I mean, this is a respected a jurist, Attorney General from New Jersey. He's going to look at all the cases. But again, for people listening, there's no hearing. There's not going to be another hearing where they've introduced Sean Watson and the women. The facts are decided. Now it just comes down to the penalty. And as you said, this process has another step where Roger Goodell is not the judge, jury, and executioner, but he is the appellate judge, or he names the appellate judge, which is really kind of the same thing as before. But I know the union feels that they got that step where someone that they jointly approve of decides on the discipline. It's going to be interesting because I think, Steve, there are negotiations going on right now. There have to be. Again, like, would the union take 8 games? Would they take 10 games? Would they take 12 games? These are the kind of negotiations going on, or they leave it in the hands of Harvey, which I'm not sure the union wants.
Right. And according to the league's personal conduct policy, the appeal is going to be processed in an expedited fashion. So what do we judge that timetable to be, Andrew?
Well, the union's appeal brief, and that's all it is, there's no hearing, as I keep saying, is due, I believe, today, 2 days from the NFL submitting its brief. And these are legal briefs by lawyers, Jeffrey Kessler on Watson's side and the league lawyers. And he'll review them. I think he's under orders from Goodell to move quickly here. In fact, I think the reason Goodell's not doing it is because we have the Hall of Fame this weekend. He's busy. So I think we'll know by midweek. I do.
Midweek, okay.
Yeah. Okay, and what's your best guess?
You know, I know the league wants a year, and I think if it was Goodell, it'd be a year, but I don't think it's going to be a year. My best guess would probably be 12 games, and there's going to be a fine. There's definitely going to be a fine. It's not going to get off scot-free with the money, and we've talked a lot about how the Browns, you know, coddled him with the money. And then I think there are going to be a lot of things in there about counseling and about, I don't know if they can legislate remorse, but he certainly hasn't shown remorse. But counseling, yes, those kind of things.
Right.
Knowing that there are reports out there, Andrew, that with the settlement negotiations they had, the league offered, reportedly, 12 games and a $10 million fine. If it's not a year, are we expecting it somewhere at least in between 12 games and a year, or might it be that number that had been reportedly previously discussed?
It could be. You know, of course, the union turned that down. Watson's team turned that down. It could be. You know, I think we're all speculating, but once the process we just outlined is in place, it's teed up for appeal for the league because everything I just talked about. It's not like Judge Robinson said, I don't know, it's he said, she said, right? She didn't say that at all. She said the she said are more credible than the he said.
Right.
And this guy clearly went to massages for sex. And that's a problem. You know, and the league is not going to sit back and say, yeah, we should do six games. Because forget 24 women, forget 66 women. Even if it's just the three women that testified, or four women, that's a lot. That's three more than Roethlisberger, three more than Elliott, three more than Rice. So that's a lot.
And why did the league only choose four, not 24?
I don't know. I think, you know, it was 3 days. They tried to streamline it. If I'm the league lawyer, maybe I would have had a few more. But if I'm thinking, okay, let's give the three most chilling details or most graphic details and show the pattern, because clearly she, Robinson, saw the pattern that we've been reading about for years.
Last one I had for you, Andrew, very quickly, because I know you've done a lot of contracts. The whole Kyler Murray independent study clause.
Yeah.
In your time, have you ever seen something like that within a contract, and what does its presence in it, at least initially, now that they supposedly took it out, say to you?
Been doing this 30 years as an agent, a team executive, and a media analyst, and I have never seen anything like it. I've never seen a situation where you have to legislate a player to study even a minimal amount. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I'm not sure Murray understood it, because Murray lashed out at others, the media, I guess, for thinking he wasn't a good worker. It wasn't the media. It was his own team. His own team. And from the contract point of view, the way I read it was, if he was found, however they find, not to have 4 hours of independent study a week, they could void the future guarantees, $100 million. So it was an embarrassment to Murray and his agents. It was an embarrassment to the Cardinals. And, of course, that public shaming by, you know, me, but me, one of hundreds, got him to change it. I heard a crazy theory from someone in the, I think he's in the know. He said he thinks that the leaker of that clause was Murray's agent.
Wow.
Now, I know that sounds crazy because Murray's agent's embarrassed by it, but think about what he said. And this is a guy in the league. He doesn't know, but he thinks that it was Murray's agent because it caused so much embarrassment by the Cardinals that they removed it.
Yeah.
So
he achieved his end game.
I think it was leaked by a rival agent for a rival team to embarrass, you know, these people are cutthroat out there. So, right. Whatever, it's not in there anymore.
Yeah, but do you think there's any question that it was a deliberate leak?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think it could have been the Cardinals because, you know, we heard about $46 million a year, which would have beat Watson deal, but it really wasn't that. Maybe Murray's side put that out there. The Cardinals are mad that that's out there. Tit for tat. But it could have been the Cardinals or another team or agent.
All right. Andrew, thank you.
Appreciate the time as always, Andrew. We'll catch up with you soon.
Always a pleasure, guys.
All right, that's Andrew Brandt, who is a business and sports analyst and does his work for SI.com.
Yeah, he's the director of the Morad Center for Sports Law at University of Villanova. He ran the Packers for a decade. He was their president.
I mean, he did contracts for 30 years.
He was Aaron Rodgers' agent when he
No, he was the front office guy.
He was the front office
Packers
guy
that
with the
signed
Packers
Aaron
that signed Eric, Aaron Rodgers. So
yeah.
He drafted Aaron Rodgers when he had Brett Favre on his team.
Right. That's why I wanted to ask him about that Murray contract, because I've tried to talk to a few people in the league that have done a contract or two.
It's not.
And funny. I asked, I said, how uncommon is this? And the prevailing answer that I've gotten from people around the league is, I don't know how common it is, but I haven't seen it before.
Right. Right. Nobody's ever seen it before, but I don't know. It might become.
Well, Andrew gave it to us straight. Like, I've never seen that in my life.
Right.
30 it's, years of doing those contracts.
To me, I got to tell you, the Cardinals come off looking like cowards.
Taking it out afterwards.
Taking it out.
Yeah.
They should have come out and said, yeah, we put it in.
That was a pretty valuable protection that they had in there. I mean,
yes.
He could have forfeited $100 million if he didn't live up to the study clause. And now you take it out,
and
if this guy doesn't study and do the right thing and doesn't look prepared for games, you're going to have even more egg on your face then than you do now. Don't you? I think you do.
I think
because now you retraced your steps and you cowered from the whole thing.
Right? Yeah, you shouldn't just say, hey, the contract's in place, we're going to leave it like it is.
I think it demonstrates the kind of power that quarterbacks in this league have. They got he got the franchise to back down with public pressure.
He faced him down. I can't believe That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
And I mean, he didn't get his contract fully guaranteed. It's only 70% of his contract is guaranteed. But they've removed the clause that could potentially cost him $100 million of that contract. So, it's noteworthy.
Very much so. It's because we heard stories, and there's instances around NFL lore about other players who were notorious for that, for not being committed to the playbook.
Yeah.
And story after story of guys who, and the teams tested them to see if, with surreptitious methods, like sending them home blank film, see if they and then ask them about the film, and they come back saying, yeah, I watched it. It was great. And then this and this and this, and there was blank film. So the player didn't watch it, didn't know that it was blank. That kind of stuff going on, and other ways as well. And they just knew that the player was not putting in the academic work to be ready to play on Sundays. But I've never seen a club put it into a contract. Now that I say that, surprisingly, nobody's put it into the contract. I still think the Cardinals are cowards for taking it out when they got it put in. They put it in for a reason. And, what's Kyler Murray going to do now? Take advantage of it? He might. He certainly has the freedom to.
Yeah.
And if I'm the Cardinals, I would have said, listen, here's how it's going to work. We're going to get you in here. You pick the times when you want to study this film. And we'll have our guy come in, and he'll go over. He'll be with you. Your quarterback's coach, your offensive coordinator, whatever. A coach will be in there with you, and you'll go at it for 4 hours.
Right.
An hour a day, Monday through Thursday, or 2 hours a day, Thursday, Friday. You pick, and we'll fit it into your schedule, and that's what we'll do. And we'll that'll be the way we get it done. They just pulled it out. It's a coward move.
Yeah.
Because you did it for a reason. And that reason has not gone away.
Right.
Has not changed. And you've given up your leverage. I just, it's a bad deal. And then having him go out and Kyler went up and did an impromptu press conference and said, hey, don't call into question my work ethic. Bro, I don't know what you thought was going to happen signing that contract, but this is it.
That got awfully messy down there in Arizona real fast.
And it started when he remember, he scrubbed his
– well,
so that's, yeah. What, you know, a millennial move, but you scrub your web
– I'm going to show you I'm unhappy.
Yes, you're – yeah, instead of walking in and sitting down like a yeah. man and saying, listen, guys, here's how this is going to go down. Here's how I want it to go down. He scrubs his social media accounts of all
but that,
Cardinals.
Right, but now because he does that kind of stuff, you know, passive-aggressive stuff, like the Cardinals now look like they're walking on eggshells. Oh, don't tick off Kyler. He may want to get traded.
Right.
Then. And then what do we do?
So now he's going to be – he is not the guy.
Yeah, I don't think
he's a great athlete. Got a great arm. Does and he made some great plays, but he is not
right.
a leader. He's not a team player. He doesn't elevate the guys around him. He's in it for his. He's in it because it's what he does. He doesn't. You know, the team is secondary to all of that individual stuff for him. And you can't. That's not the guy. That's not the guy you want. That's not the guy I want to give. Hundreds of millions of dollars.
$230 million.
I do not want that guy to get that money if I'm the team.
Yeah.
And I know those guys they're rare. They're very rare. And Kyler is a worthy starting quarterback. He's got an arm and he's doing some things. But you can't reward bad behavior.
Right. Yeah, it's... They've had all kinds of problems down there. You got Marquise Goodwin, you know, criminal speeding. They're not off to a great start down there, for sure. And it's not like it's guy 67 on your 90-man roster. We're talking about some pretty prominent people here.
I don't want to make generalizations, but from a million miles away and being a lazy analyst and looking at him saying, ha-ha, that's when you're running a college program as a college coach at the pro level, and the pros are taking advantage of you.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing with grown men, not college kids, who actually have to go to class and do some things to keep their scholarship and all of that. That's a college program being run at the NFL level, and those players are taking full advantage of it. They don't have to go to class, you know. That's what that strikes me as.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Meanwhile, and this here's the difference in relationships. You want to talk about quarterback to franchise relationships. You know, Kyler Murray's scrubbing his social media account. Lamar Jackson, who still doesn't have a contract, by the way, shows up on time. He's practicing. And while a lot of people are like, hey, what's the deal? There's no issue there.
Oh, he's completely open. He said, listen, I'm my own agent. We're getting it done. I'm not.
It'll happen when it happens.
And he was like, I'm not in a hurry.
Yeah. Because the relationship there is good, you know, between right. that front office, right. the head coach, all of that stuff.
And I'll say this, too. He's got a sense of awareness knowing that don't forget, the Baltimore Ravens at a very early, point of Lamar Jackson's career went all in on him.
Right.
Got him the offensive line, got him running backs, got him, you know, they totally revamped their offense, their personnel, their roster to support him and his ability, his unique abilities. I've never seen a team transform itself so quickly for one guy as the Baltimore Ravens did for Lamar Jackson. And it got him into the playoffs, made him
they were 14-2.
Made him the MVP. And they, you know, they ran into a buzzsaw here in Buffalo in those playoffs.
Oh, in 2020.
In 2020. But that was his MVP season. Or no, 2019 was his MVP season. And so they come in and so I would think Lamar Jackson knows that Baltimore is the spot for him, which is why he has done his part to keep the relationship strong.
Yeah. Because he might not be able to walk into a situation like that somewhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I just think that also speaks to, you know, strong organization, builds good relationships with their players. And so when you get to a tricky situation like this, where it's going to be a major investment and all of that stuff, you know, it doesn't start flipping boats over in the ocean.
Well, I mean, it's everybody puts their cards on the table, shows them, and says, you know, let's find a solution together. It's a conversation, not a negotiation.
Yeah.
And that's how it works. That's how the best way. That's the healthiest way to do it. That's where the Baltimore Ravens are, and the Arizona Cardinals are in the desert. Literally. You know what? Literally and figuratively.
Figuratively, too. Yeah, it's pretty – it's not eye-opening. It's just right there. It's plain to see, and the difference is startling from one team to the next.
That's
it
exactly
really
right.
is.
It is.
In terms of the quarterback to franchise relationship.
And I get it. I mean, the franchise doesn't want to go out and try and find another quarterback as good as Kyler Murray. There's not going to be one available. They're not going to be able to find one. And so they've got to do what they can to make it work with him.
Right.
And that means, you know, stroking him and
kowtowing to him.
Taking the clause out of the contract, you know, all of that.
Man. There is a former Bills linebacker, Steve, that is back in the NFL. And I'll give you a hint. When he was here, he was legendary.
Oh, I know.
Kiko Alonso is back in the NFL. He signed with the Saints. He's 31 years old now.
The legend of Kiko
Alonso.
The
legend of Kiko Alonso. Yes. Alive and well in the Big Easy.
There it is.
He's
not taken a snap since 2019.
I know. He basically... he took a COVID vacation from the NFL.
But they did say they brought him in, worked him out, and he is in good shape.
I mean, he's always been a good athlete, not an elite athlete, good athlete. Because, you know, I think a lot of Bills fans, the last memory of him is watching Josh fake him out of his shoes.
Turn him in circles, yeah.
On a scramble play against the Dolphins. I mean, he turned around two times and didn't know where he was and still missed the guy.
Charles Clay game.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I wish him well. I hope it works out for him in New Orleans. I mean, he was here for a hot minute and then became, you know, the trade bait for Chip Kelly, who coached him at Oregon, to get LeSean McCoy up here in the deal with the Eagles.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Kiko, who had a monster rookie season here, I think he was second in Rookie of the Year honors, finished second. So he was ultra productive.
Yeah.
I mean, he was all over the place.
He was on the field and all over the field.
But his time here was very short-lived. And
got traded. He was part of the
He goes to Philadelphia.
LeSean McCoy.
He's there for a year. Then he goes to Miami.
Miami. Then so he was in New Orleans for a minute.
Yeah, he bounced around a little bit.
And then at New Orleans was the last place he played, so he has familiarity with it. Dennis Allen liked him, and now Dennis Allen's the head coach, and presto changeo, bring the guy back. Let's take a look. He's been gone for 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, like, off the map for 3 years, and now he's back. Let's see what he looks like, and sure enough, they signed him.
That's got to be an interesting transition. You didn't get any younger. You haven't been exposed to the speed of the game for 3 years. I mean, maybe it is like riding a bike to a certain extent, but there's got to be a little shock value there at the outset. Whoa! You know what I mean?
Well, like, here's the thing, and I'll tip my hat to him if he comes back and plays well. That's amazing because think about it. It's hard. You know, you're going to go out and you're going to train for a race or a marathon or something. You kind of got that. But he's training. He's not even playing for 3 years. How do you dredge up the intensity to practice for 3 years, to stay in shape for 3 years, not even knowing if you're going to play again, let alone which team, you know what I mean? If you even want to play again. I mean, I would think that if he wanted to play, he could have been a blip on the radar at some point during that 3 years. It's like he just was on a beach somewhere, except apparently he was working out pretty good. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do. I don't know how you keep yourself in that kind of shape, in pro football kind of shape,
right?
Not doing anything, not on a team, without anything on the horizon.
Because game shape is different.
And it takes some mental gymnastics to keep telling yourself for 3 years that my chance is coming after you've seen how the game works. That's pretty unbelievable.
It's pretty impressive. Break time here for us. When we come back, more of your questions from the OBL Fan Friday mailbag as we get ready for the return of the blue and red practice tonight here at Highmark Stadium. Back in a second here on One Bills Live. It is summer, and Bills head coach Sean McDermott wants us all thinking about sun defense. Coach is passionate about skin cancer prevention as it runs in his family, and he takes sun protection very seriously. Most importantly, of course, is wearing sunscreen. Right now, you can stop by your local Wegmans for all of your sun protection needs. Wegmans will donate $1 for every Wegmans sunscreen product sold through August 31st. In their Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse stores. It's a great way to protect your family and help the fight against skin cancer and think sun defense like Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Going to go to the OBL Friday fan mailbag. We got to get back to some of your questions that you have been asking thus far. And Nick asks, how does our offensive line depth look so far at camp? As good as we are, I can't help but remember now, the constant shuffling of the O-line due to injuries really hurt us mid-season last year, and I don't want that to derail us this year. Your concerns are legitimate, Nick, and we understand them. I would say the most overwhelming difference about the depth on the O-line this year, maybe in comparison to last year, Steve, is there is a greater contingent of veteran players along, you know, the quote-unquote second and third units.
Yeah, proven veteran players.
Greg Van Roten,
yeah.
Greg Manns.
Kessenberry. And then, you know, bringing in Saffold. And we haven't even gotten to, you know, guys like Cody Ford, Ryan Bates.
Bobby Hart.
Now, Bobby Hart has struggled at times. He's a better guard than he is a tackle, and he's had to play all that stuff. But the Bills have a really veteran, experienced offensive line that goes about eight deep if you count Spencer Brown as one of those, you know what I mean?
Right, who's not yet in the team portions of practice.
But it's, you know, even, you know, Bates, you know, yeah. The difference this year is that the guys, they've got a whole room full of guys who have played a lot of games, and that's a big plus for an NFL team. I think if you're going to look at most of the teams around the league, at the final cutdown, the teams are going to be circling the Buffalo Bills and their offensive line releases, if there is going to be any. They've got a ton of really good players. Plus, you and I have been talking about Alec Anderson.
The undrafted rookie from UCLA.
We both like him. I don't know. The coaches may not even know his name, for all we know.
Right.
But we like him.
I just like the way he moves. I think he mirrors well in pass protection. He kind of holds his ground, even against some of the bigger pass rushers, like, you know, Shaq.
He seems gritty. He's not backing down from anybody. He's got, you know, he moves, like you said, he moves well. He gets in front of people. He's big enough to anchor.
Yep.
He's played a couple of different spots. So, you know, guys like that who don't even make this list that we're talking about of these experienced backups, he's playing well.
Yeah.
Eric, you can say what you want about Aaron Cromer has done a nice job so far.
Yeah.
And you and Jim Oakes, like you and me, are saying, wow, look at these guys. So I think you're right. The injuries are a problem. The fact that they can't get the five guys they think are the best on the field.
Hasn't happened yet in camp.
Is an issue. But it's not urgent yet.
The good news.
In fact, you're about 2.5-3 weeks from it being urgent.
Yeah. The good news is Ryan Bates is working his way back into the practice setting. He was back on the practice field yesterday. Still not doing teamwork yet, much like Spencer Brown. But he is on the road to a full return to practice. So we'll wait on that and monitor that. And Spencer Brown has been getting closer and closer to being cleared for teamwork as well. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens as soon as next week, if not sooner. So we'll have to keep our eyes on that development and where that goes. But you get those two guys back. Now you've got the right side of your line intact. And
right.
All you're missing is Saffold at that point.
You can start to get a feel for it, you know. And it's And also, too, what gets forgotten in this, these guys aren't on the field, and we're thinking, wow, oh, my gosh, and you start wringing your hands. They're there. They're in the meetings. They're taking part in the conversation. They just can't step into the play. They're standing right on the sidelines. They're talking to the other offensive linemen. They're taking mental reps. So it's not like they're getting dropped in, don't know the words, don't know the calls, don't know the plays. They know all of that stuff. It's just getting a feel for it and doing it with a guy that you're actually going to be taking live snaps with. And that's it's an important part of the equation, but it's only the final, you know, cherry on top of the cake of training camp.
Marty from the mailbag asks, what's the latest on this punting competition? So Steve and I were talking about this a little bit last week, and I think it kind of went this way, and I think it still holds true. The last time we saw these guys punt in practice, it was my opinion that Matt Araiza was just a little bit more consistent with hang time and distance than Hock. That's not to say Hock didn't have some good punts. He did, but he also had some subpar efforts. And Araiza had fewer of those than Hock did.
Right.
And Steve and I had this conversation right on the sideline watching practice together. If things are relatively even between the rookie and Hock, it wouldn't surprise us if they side with the rookie because there's more upside there. If he is as good as Hock is and he's a rookie, logic tells you with proper player development from special teams coordinator Matthew Smiley along with his assistants, he's going to get better. He is still relatively young at the position. Araiza comes from a soccer background. He actually got a scholarship to San Diego State as a place kicker first before doing some punting as well.
Right.
But then he does so well with his leg strength that he's drafted as a punter. So still young at the position, you can argue that there's a ton of upside there.
Absolutely.
With a lot of great natural ability. So if things are equal by the time we get to the end of the preseason, I think we would both anticipate they side with the rookie and bank on upside.
Yeah, and there's a reason they brought him in. And Hawk was a little inconsistent last year. You can say what you want. Some of it might have been the fact that he didn't work too much.
Because the offense was so good.
The offense was so good at the end of the season. I mean, he went through two games, didn't punt. So the last two New England games.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, you know, as a pro, you can't let that be an excuse. But, you know, the stuff about holding – I've said it a lot, and I was on with, you know, the morning guys. You know, holding is easy to learn, but that doesn't make it less important. So it's the pressure that you got to deal with more so than the act of actually holding the ball for the kicker. And his punting, I'm with you, Brownie. I think Araiza has been much more consistent, and also even his bad punts are not bad. They're not horrific punts. And his big punts, you know, are game changers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's got the leg up. Oh, my, that's stupid.
I didn't even know you were doing that.
It's his job. I think he's the guy right now, although Hawk has got some experience and they, you know, he's got, you know, a depth of knowledge that they know about him. I think Araiza is going to be the guy, but I don't know. I mean, we're sitting here looking by the naked eye.
Yeah.
We've done all the stuff. I've got the get-off times for the kickers. I've got the hang times for the punts, all of that stuff. I think the one thing that, more so than anything, particularly for a young punter, is consistency. You don't want to hit it off the side of your foot when you're in your own end in a playoff game.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Araiza watching him punt is he punts like a goalkeeper in soccer. He's not the traditional classic, you know, heel over your head punter. You know what I mean? Like that full gymnastic, like follow through.
Right.
He pretty much stops at his shoulder when he kicks it. He looks like a soccer goalkeeper doing that when a soccer goalkeeper punts the ball. So it's interesting, the soccer background there.
But you're right. And you get, you know, remember the old days when the guys used to swing it and their leg would go all the way up to their face mask?
Yeah.
All of that.
Brian Mormon used to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, do it. Yeah, do it your own way. You know, you
whatever works.
You're right. He does look like a goalkeeper when he punts.
Let's go back to the mailbag. Last one here from Charlie. Predicting the final wide receiving core is so tough. You think Crowder's a lock, but McKenzie and Shakir tearing it up while he's hurt complicates that. Does Stevenson get a spot as a returner, or has Austin played well enough to bump him? Does Kumerow stick for special teams? Great problems to have. Yeah, they are great problems, Charlie. You're right. Stevenson's injured now. He's going to be out multiple weeks with a foot injury. So that is going to take him out of the mix for the foreseeable future. Then, while yes, McKenzie and Shakir have torn it up, Crowder's back now, and I thought he had a pretty darn good day yesterday, and I do see a role for him on this team. He's too valuable and too proven a veteran to not have him on the roster, in my opinion. So as far as I'm concerned, he's on the roster. So now what you're looking at here is Diggs, Davis, McKenzie, Crowder, Shakir. That's five. So now you've arguably got one spot left. Is it Kumerow? Is it Austin? Is Stevenson back from injury? Those are the questions that time will only answer. And if you remember last year, Steve, Stevenson got put on IR in the preseason, or a non-playing designation. I can't remember if it was. It wasn't. Yeah, I think it was injured reserve or PUP, one of those. In any event, he wasn't active for the beginning of the year because he had a foot injury then. Mm-hmm. So the injury might actually be it's not a blessing for Stevenson, but it could be a blessing for the team in terms of making the decision for them to a certain degree while also being able to hold on to him with an injury designation, if you know what I'm saying.
So we've got eight names like Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis, Isaiah McKenzie, Jamison Crowder, Khalil Shakir, Kumerow, Stevenson, and Tavon Austin. That's eight.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't even get down into Isaiah Neil Hodgins and Neil Pau and
Hodgins.
So there's a long way to go. But it's a crowded room.
Preseason games are going to have to separate some of these guys. Some of these guys are going to have to separate themselves in preseason performances. It's just no two ways about it. And it's not going to be easy. We have to take a break. Steve and I to close things up when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, Steve, we've got the return of the Blue and Red practice at Highmark Stadium here tonight at 5:30. All tickets have been distributed, so if you're coming down, be ready to have some fun. And if you can't make it, we'll have a full report for you on what went on BuffaloBills.com later this evening. Five players to watch, Steve, was a write-up I put up on BuffaloBills.com for tonight. Players to watch, I began with the undrafted rookie, Alec Anderson, who we kind of already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listed a couple other rookies, James Cook and Khalil Shakir.
Mm-hmm.
And then I added Ed Oliver because he's just been so fun to watch and so dang dominant.
He seems poised, yeah.
Yeah, and then Saran Neal I threw in there because I think he might be ready, Steve. You know, and Leslie Frazier talked about this. He's unquestionably a physical talent to play at this level. But we heard Leslie talking about how he's finally meshing the mental side of the game with those physical gifts. And he might be able to, you know, spell some people like corner if they need
right. Yeah. Saran is athlete enough to play at any place.
And he's a great special team.
Yeah. He's athlete enough to play anywhere in the secondary. You'll get a chance to see him. He's a dominant special teams player, a Pro Bowl caliber special teams player. And we'll see if his role expands. But all those other guys, Alec Anderson, James Cook, Saran Neal, Ed Oliver, and Khalil Shakir. Good article.
Enjoy practice tonight. While you're waiting for practice to start, check out the Bills by the Number podcast on any podcast platform. Steve and I got a good episode for you. We'll see you Monday at 1 back at camp.